Custodians had taken the usual precautions. Dean was on the top floor by the attic window, cradling his Remington 580. The two women covered the first story, with Christy making an occasional check out back to make sure that the approaching wag wasn't part of an ambush. Jack sat on the swing seat on the porch, the 357 Magnum with the 6-inch barrel in his lap. The horses looked exhausted, their chests flecked with crusted sweat. The canvas was lashed tight over the iron hoops, stained with the red-orange mud of the desert.
Ho there!
The man was around 50, his shoulders stooped, with a dark beard speckled with white. The woman who sat next to him seemed about the same age. Her hair was gray and looked to have been badly cut, with bare patches of skull showing through. They both wore dark cloaks, covering the rest of their bodies. With a visible effort, the driver hauled on the brake, looping the reins around it.
Oh, we're tired out.
You're welcome to water horses. We give you a meal if you want. You can stay tonight here.
You mean sleep in a bed?
Guess so.
The man climbed down, walking around the rig to help his wife off the seat. She was so weak that she nearly fell and hung onto his shoulder. Behind Jack, Mildred and Christy came out onto the porch, both holding guns.
No need for them. We don't have a bow and arrow between us.
Jack stood and moved toward them.
Mind showing us inside the rig?
No.
Jack stopped, bringing up his gun. Christy and Mildred also covered the strangers, while the barrel of Dean's .22 rifle poked out of the upstairs window. The man waved his free hand, while struggling to support his distraught wife.
Oh, don't chill us, folks. I'll explain a little more after we've taken a rest. We got us something precious in the wag here. Something could make us a fortune.
Don't tell them, Ronnie. They'll murder us for it.
If we wanted to chill you, then we'd likely have done it by now, lady. You got something you figure's valuable, then that's your business. It'll be safe with us. But we have to look inside and make sure you don't have a dozen armed men there waiting to try and cold cock us. Understand?
Sure. Take a look. But, the thing we got, it's wrapped up. Please, don't open it.
Jack called up the stairs.
Dean, come on down and have a look inside the rig. But don't go in, and don't touch nothing.
Anything.
Christy grinned at Jack.
Sorry. Used to that with Ryan.
Name's Ronnie Warren, and this is my woman, Raylene. Excuse me. Been traveling from one side of the Deathlands to the other. Found our treasure in White Sands. Thought we'd sell it to a real trip of powerful baron. Where's the nearest village land?
Don't know. One a ways east, direction you're heading, but...
Hey, mister, can we get in and have a rest and some water, please?
Yeah, sure.
Dean appeared on the steps. He walked past the strangers, pulling himself up and unlacing part of the back of the canvas covering, and peered in.
Don't let him touch our precious.
Then the woman's eyes rolled white back in their sockets, and she slumped unconscious in her husband's arms. Christy and Mildred moved to help, while Jack stayed watchful on guard, waiting to hear what Dean had to say.
Nothing in here. Pots and pans, clothes, and this thing they're so fired about. Looks about 8 feet long, but it's all tied in rags. You want me to...
Leave it. Just leave it and come in.
The man looked over his shoulder.
Could the boys seated the team and put the rig into your barn for safety?
Sure. I'll help him.
I'm grateful, folks. Most grateful.
Jack nodded, his ruby eyes staring intently as Mildred and Christy half-carried Raylene into the house. Though he said nothing, he was looking puzzled. Doc's room had a big double bed in it, and the strangers were put there. The woman tossed her head from side to side, almost delirious. Mildred fetched some cold fresh water and bathed her forehead, mouth, and neck, cooling the fever. Ronnie stood helplessly by, watching.
Get her into bed. Take a rest yourself. Anything we can get you?
No, thanks, ma'am. I didn't get your name. I should do, so we can say a prayer to the Lord for sending us your way.
I'm Mildred Wyeth, This is Christy Roth. The boy with white hair is Jack Lauren. It's his spread. The kid is called Dean Cauter, son of a friend who's away for a few days. There's another old man with us, but he's taken a sabbatical. Hopefully he'll be back soon.
Ronnie's eyes seemed to grow wider as Mildred spoke the last few sentences. He smiled, showing rotted teeth.
Oh, well, I thank you. The Lord will be certain to reward you for your kindness.
Later, Christy found Mildred scrubbing her hands with carbolic soap in the kitchen sink, working at her nails with a stiff-bristled brush.
What's wrong? You think they got a bad illness?
Mildred dried her hands on a small towel.
Don't know, Christy. I need to examine them more carefully, but I don't much like what I've seen so far.
Baron Torrance was everything that his Isville of Hightower would have led you to expect. Disgusting, run down, and filthy. He was lying on a mattress on the floor, in what looked like it might once have been the main restaurant of the sprawling resort hotel. Ryan guessed his age would be around 70. Thin strands of white hair were pasted across the top of a yellowing skull. It was difficult to calculate his weight, but it was certainly the wrong side of 300 pounds. His little eyes glowered piggishly up at the two outlanders from their wrinkled beds of layered fat. The Baron's lips were thin, peeling pettishly back off the yellowed remains of crooked teeth.
Sir, these are the men who have been sent by my enemies to assassinate me, Arkadin.
No, Baron. They lost their horses and trade goods in the quake. Managed to climb out the canyon. Came here looking for some kind of help.
Help? What sort of help would someone of my rank and dignity offer to a pair of murderous wolf's heads?
A bed for the night would be good, Baron. Little food to see us on our way in the morning.
Do we know you?
Torrance leaned up on one elbow with great effort. His clothes were just as baggy and shapeless as the man himself, looking like they'd been hastily tacked together from the stained and worn-out curtains of a pest-hole gaudy.
We?
Trader looked across at Ryan.
Is there something wrong with my old glims, Brother Danny? I don't see any we in here, do you?
The giggling came from behind a curtained doorway at the far end of the shadowy room, but Torrance ignored it.
A sense of humor can be a fine way of talking yourself onto the gallows, Outlander.
The Baron looked at his sec man.
Do they have names, Arkadin?
Danny and Willard King, Baron. Traveled with ammo. Lost the lot.
Still got pretty blasters there. Managed to hang on to those during the shaky last night. Perhaps you might like to give them to us.
Ryan couldn't tell whether it was supposed to be a joke or a threat, or just the idle, vacuous suggestion of a sick and bored madman. In terms of giving up their guns, though, it didn't much matter which.
No, Baron. You can try and take our blasters, but we won't give them up.
Oh, stop that rat-blasted noise, children!
Torrance returned his attention to Trader and Ryan, the question of their guns seemingly forgotten.
You can meet my little girls, Outlanders. Come out!
Well, I'll be hung.
Ryan nudged Trader hard. Baron Torrance's little girls came simpering out of their hiding places like a pair of overdressed spiders, sidling across the room hand in hand, pushing and pinching each other.
For heaven's sake, behave, girls!
Andy Arkadin stared fixedly across the room, taking care that his eyes never quite focused on anything, or on anybody.
Sissy and Bessie Torrance, these are two brothers, my cherubs, Danny and Willard King. They deal in ammo for blasters and got caught in the quake.
Trader seemed quite paralyzed by the sight at first, but he soon recovered and offered a small bow.
Good to meet you, ladies.
Yeah, best of the day.
Sissy looked to be around 50, with bubbly curls that had been dyed the color of Kansas wheat,